There was a few chapters back, but...
Okay, so tonight we'll begin chapter 17. Chapter 17, Canto 9, is one of the shortest chapters in the Bhagavatam, only 17 verses. And there's only one purport. So then we'll read through chapter 17 and then we'll go into chapter 17. Then we'll go into chapter 18 and we'll read till verse number 16. Because there's not a lot of purports. There aren't a lot of purports in this section. Okay. So, chapter 17 is called
Dynasty of the Sons of Pururva.
The Dynasties of the Sons of Pururva. Shukadev Goswami said, from Pururava came a son named Ayu, whose very powerful sons were Nahush, Kshatra Vritta, Raji, Rapa, and Anena. O Maharaj Parikshit, now hear about the dynasty of Kshatra Vritta. Kshatra Vritta's son was Suhotra, who had three sons named Kasha, Kusha and Gritsamada. From Gritsamada came Shunaka, and from him came Shonaka, the great saint, the best of those conversant with the Rig Veda. So if you go back to Canto 1, then the beginning of the Bhagavatam is a conversation between sages and Naimishwani, yeah. And who is speaking to the sages? Suta Goswami. And then who is asking the questions? Who is questioning? On behalf of the sages, who is questioning? Shonaka. Yeah, Shonaka Rishi. So all of these persons, this is describing the history of the universe and how everyone in the universe is connected. Like that. So Shonaka is being described also. You can do the exam or you don't?
Not today.
Not today. Or you just do it whenever you want to do it?
I'll let you know.
Oh, you'll let me know? Okay.
I wanted to do it, but I couldn't have the time today as well.
Okay. Well, I'll let me know when you want to do it.
I'll call you.
Thank you. Okay. The son of Kasha was Kashi, and his son was Rashtra, the father of Dhirghatma. Dhirghatma had a son named Dhanvantari, who was the inaugurator of the medical science and an incarnation of Lord Vasudev, the enjoyer of the results of sacrifices. One who remembers the name of Dhanvantari can be released from all disease. What is it?
Yeah,
so he's famous because in the material world, he is the incarnation of the Lord who brings the Ayurveda. Ayurveda means the science of health. Ayur means? Actually means life. Yeah, life. So Ayurveda, Veda means knowledge of how to live in this world. If you follow Ayurvedic principles, you can live a very long and healthy life. And Prabhupada, he was very attached to Ayurvedic principles. Even in his old age, when he was 70 plus and he was traveling, and Prabhupada's health was never really good. In those final final 10 or 12 years, between 65 and 77, when he was in the West most of the time traveling, his health was not good because he was pushing himself. The material body needs a certain amount of rest. And I mean, Prabhupada's schedule was very rigorous. You know, he was very powerful. He was sleeping 2 hours a night. He would go to bed at 10:30, get up at 12:30. And then he would have half an hour's rest after each meal. So that's 3 hours of rest a day. And then he would have a massage for an hour. So that's about 4 hours rest. So that was his rest for a day. It was about 4 hours. So he was pushing the body a lot. And because he was pushing his body so much, his body was, and because he was getting older, then his body was, you know, having difficulties. But Prabhupada, he would follow Ayurvedic principles, and even when they offered him allopathic medicine, he would not take it. He wouldn't take the allopathic. He said, no, I'll just take the Ayurvedic medicine. And generally, Prabhupada wouldn't so much even take Ayurvedic medicine, but he would just be very particular about what he ate, about the particular spice combinations, for example. And Prabhupada insisted that all of his meals, he had a cook, he had different cooks over the years, and the cooks, before they started cooking in the morning, they would have to grind the spices for Prabhupada's meal. So he'd have fresh turmeric. Prabhupada wouldn't have powdered turmeric. The turmeric had to be ground. So it would take 1 hour every morning for the cook, you know, between a 10 and maybe between 9 o'clock and 10 o'clock, they would just grind the spices, get everything ready for Prabhupada, and then they would begin to cook. So Prabhupada was very particular, and quite often in the morning, he would call the cooks in, and he'd discuss which spices to use. And he'd say, today use more of this, use less of that, like that. So he was very particular. So not even so much was he taking Ayurvedic medicines, but he was just very particular about what he ate, which is Ayurveda, and about the spice combinations and so forth. And he always insisted everything had to be fresh. Even one devotee cut fruit for Prabhupada, and then in the West, you know, we cut the fruit, so you get a watermelon or a cantaloupe or something. You cut it, and then you leave half in the fridge, and you use the other half the next day. And when Prabhupada saw the devotee had cut the fruit in half and left it in the fridge, and the next day Prabhupada said, no, you cannot, this is not the system. He said, you must give me fresh every day. You cannot cut in half, leave it for a day in the fridge, and then give it to me. Like that. So everything had to be fresh. That was his system. Right? And that's how the health stays good. So Prabhupada was teaching us Ayurvedic principles. And if he was feeling sick, he would get the devotees to make neem badi. So you get neem, lots of neem, and cook with like dal, and make like little patties, little like balls. And then Prabhupada would take them, and that would be. And Prabhupada said that if you take two neem leaves, fresh neem leaves, take them and eat them every day, he said you'll never get sick. So this was his basic principle. So Ayurveda means to live like this, very healthy. Of course, everything these days, nothing we do is really healthy. What is one of the biggest problems for people's health these days?
Exercise.
No exercise, very good. Or, I was going to say, if you say it the opposite way, it is sitting. Now, people are realizing now, the reason why so many people are sick is because they sit too much every day. Because if you analyze your day, even myself today, because I was preparing class and doing, you sit nearly all day. And that's not natural for the body. It's not good for the health. And it will give you health problems long term. In the old days, people didn't sit like this all day like we do these days. You know, work behind a computer and like that. It was not there. In the old days, everyone was moving about and, you know, you go out into the fields or you go and collect your water or you do this or do that. So it's a very artificial system. Even, you know, like we have a tram stop just down here. You know, number one tram. You know, it's like, you know, it takes 6 minutes from here to there to walk. You know, but sometimes if I'm going there, devotees say, oh, I'll give you a lift. Yeah. So it's almost like everything we do is detrimental to our health. Instead of just walking and exercising and being healthy. So Ayurveda means just to live healthy. And you see Prabhupada every morning go for his morning walk. And he would have a massage every day. Massage every day, morning walk. So he's very much concerned about looking after his health. Every letter he would sign, I hope this meets you in good health. So he would do that. And then if devotees got sick, he would say, take complete rest. Back in the 1970s in ISKCON, there were no holidays. No such thing as a holiday in the 1970s in ISKCON. No one had holidays. Like, you just worked every day for Krishna. Like Hari Sariprabhu was with Prabhupada every day for 15 months. That was it. And Prabhupada said, you just have to be with me all the time. That was his service. So, when Brahmananda Prabhu, he passed away recently, he was a sannyasi, he became sick. So he spent, or was it Garga Muni? It might have been Garga Muni, it was one of them. So he became sick, so he spent 2 weeks like resting. He went down the coast of India, below Puri somewhere, found somewhere nice where the beach is, and he just stayed there for 2 weeks and rested. And when Prabhupada found out, Prabhupada said, very good. Right? But all the other devotees were criticizing him. Ah, he's in Maya. But Prabhupada said, when you're sick, you need to rest. That's the system. And even Prabhupada himself would do that. One time he was in one city, it's in TKG's diary. I can't remember where it was. But Prabhupada spent about 3 weeks or 1 month in one place. It's quite a long time for Prabhupada because he always moved. And he wasn't doing much while he was there, which normally he would, you know, be giving preaching programs every day, and his translation work was... But he wasn't doing so much. And after a few days, Tamal Krishnamurti said, Prabhupada, what are we doing here? Let's go and preach. And Prabhupada said, no, sometimes you have to slow down. He said, that is also necessary. So Prabhupada obviously felt that he needed rest, so he just rested. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, don't work too much, don't work too little, don't rest too much, don't rest too little, don't eat too much, don't eat too little, don't sleep too much, don't sleep too little. That's Ayurveda. Just balance, live a balanced life, sattva guna, mode of goodness, go back to Godhead key.
Yeah.
Yeah. Provided you pass your exam. If you ever do it. Oh, that's right, just let me know.
Don't call me, I'll call you.
Yeah, trust me. Don't know if my phone's working. You can try. I'll change my number by next week. Okay. The son of Danvantari was Ketuman, and his son was Bhimarata. The son of Bhimarata was Divodasa, and the son of Divodasa was Juman, also known as Pratardana. Juman was also known as Shatrujit, Vatsa, Ritadwaj, and Kuvalayashra. From him were born Alarka and other sons. Alarka, the son of Juman, reigned over the earth for 66,000 years. My dear King Parikshit, no one other than him has reigned over the earth for as long as a young man. For so long as a young man. So why did people live for so long? Satya Yuga. Mode of goodness. Because they're living in the mode of goodness. Right? There was fresh water, sunshine, and they were eating good food, and they were very healthy. Whereas these days, we don't get much sunshine. We're vitamin D deficient. Right?
No.
You have to take tablets, do you?
Yeah.
God, that's bad.
Every day.
Is it? Because people don't go into the sun.
They go cover.
Yeah, you have to go into the sun regularly. Get sun on your body regularly. That's where the vitamin D is coming from. Like that. So it's necessary. You have to get into the sun regularly. And people don't go into the sun. They don't have fresh air. Good air. They don't have
fresh water.
Fresh water. Yeah, and don't have good food. They put fluoride in our water, and chlorine, these things. Yeah, just look on the internet, type in these things, and find out what they do to the human body. Because at the farm we drink rain water. The best is actually mineral water from the earth. That's actually the best. That's better than rainwater. But rainwater is also good. So we drink rainwater. And it's very strange when you come to Melbourne, you drink the tap water. And you can taste the chemicals in it. So, it's not actually good for you. Melbourne water is pretty good compared to the rest of the world, but still it's not as good as it should be. So, but if we have all these things, then you'll live for 66,000 years. Because it happened previously. Bhagavatam says people used to live. 100,000 years was the average age. You know, this devotee was a king for 66,000 years. I mean, that's like 66 years these days. And everyone was strong and healthy. Okay. Kali Yuga, everyone becomes weak and... Oh my God. From Malacca came a son named Santati, and his son was Sunita. The son of Sunita was Niketana. The son of Niketana was Dharmaketu, and the son of Dharmaketu was Satchaketu. O King Parikshit, from Satchaketu came a son named Drishtaketu, and from Drishtaketu came Sukumara, the emperor of the entire world. From Sukumara came a son named Vitihotra, and from Vitihotra, Bharga, and from Bharga, Bhagabhumi. O Maharaj Parikshit, all of these kings were descendants of Kashi, and they could also be called descendants of Kshatravritta. The son of Rapa was Rabasa. From Rabasa came Gambira, and from Gambira came a son named Akriya. The son of Akriya was known as Brahmavit, or king. Now hear about the descendants of Anena. From Anena came a son named Shuddha, and his son was Shuchi. The son of Shuchi was Dharma Sarati, also called Chitrakrit. From Chitrakrit was born a son named Shantaraja, a self-realized soul who performed all kinds of Vedic ritualistic ceremonies and therefore did not beget any progeny. The sons of Raji were 500, all very powerful. On the request of the demigods, Raji killed the demons and thus returned the kingdom of heaven to Lord Indra. But Indra, fearing such demons as Prahlad, returned the kingdom of heaven to Raji and surrendered himself at Raji's lotus feet. Upon Raji's death, Indra begged Raji's sons for the return of the heavenly planet. They did not return it, however, although they agreed to return Indra's shares in ritualistic ceremonies. Mahatma Prabhu, can you please read the purport?
Raji conquered the kingdom of heaven, and therefore when Indra, heavenly king, begged Raji's sons to return it, they refused. Because they had not taken the heavenly kingdom from Indra, but had inherited it from their father, they considered it their parental property, paternal property. Why then should they return it to the demigods?
Any points? So this is the nature of the material world. We've seen this all through the Bhagavatam. Especially the last few cantos, you see. Everyone is always arguing about everything. And in Kali Yuga, everything becomes heightened. And therefore, Kali Yuga is known as the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. Everyone is always arguing about something. Everyone is always going behind each other's back. And there's always politics. And there is always intrigue. And there is mistrust. It happens continuously in the Kali Yuga. Even in families, it happens. Sometimes even amongst the devotees. Devotees are sometimes saying other things behind each other's back. So this is the nature of the age of Kali, the age of quarrel. So best thing is that one stays always engaged in actually hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because when you're hearing the Bhagavatam, you become less inclined to act and behave like that, to speak materialistic subject matters, and to be deceitful, and to be to develop lesser qualities. The Bhagavatam raises us to the platform where we develop good qualities, and when you develop good qualities, then you will not behave in a quarrelsome way, in a hypocritical way. But the nature of the material world, it's always like this. Even this is going a long way back, when the earth was more good, when the universe was more good. But still, there's always some problems there. People fighting over land and property and all these things. Any points?
So he here is saying that the question is answered, why should they return? So in one way it's because they are doing right, because this is their father's property. And he has not even said that his father instructed his son to go back the kingdom or something. So was there something wrong to retain it or?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the nature of the material world.
Mm-hmm.
Nature of the material world, everyone wants to own something and they argue about things and something like that. So, I mean, it's not really wrong in anyone's behalf because it's Indra's planet. Indra gave it to Raji, Raji gave it to his son, so, I mean, both are right, really. It really doesn't matter so much who owns it, really. Material world means we can all just have what we have and we can all just share it. And it's like now in Greece, because in Greece they're on austerity measures because the economy fell apart. So, but the good side of it is everyone's cooperating a lot more. The Greek people are cooperating a lot more because a lot of people can't pay their rent because there's no money. You know, what we call money, like, you know, paper. There's no paper, there's no money. So then, because everyone's in the same situation, then the landlord say, well, you don't have to pay me anything. Just live here. So everyone's cooperating a lot more. So there's no real need for us to all argue about who owns what and who does what. We can all just live here and we can all be happy. We could actually get rid of money out of society. And we could all just live together and just, you know, look after each other and grow food and milk cows. But it's not going to happen. Especially if Donald Trump becomes the president of America. Might happen too. Imagine if Donald Trump becomes the president of America.
Only in America.
Yeah, not only in America. It'll happen in other places. But if it does happen, I mean, he's just so driven by money. You know, it's just the whole world's just becoming obsessed with a false situation. It's a big mess. Well, I was listening to the news on the way up. I was driving up yesterday from the farm. And I had to turn the news off. It was so bad. Now, the problems are just so ingrained in society now. They have no idea how to get themselves out of the whole situation. This is what happens when you don't come to Bhagavatam class.
Regularly.
Very good. Nicham Bhagavata Sivaya. Even the kids come to the class.
Mm-hmm.
Such good kids. Do you guys actually learn anything? Or? You learn something when you come here? Or? Yeah, you do. Yeah, Brenda does. Brenda listens actually, very carefully. I notice she listens. One day she will give class.
Yeah.
You can, Brenda. When you get bigger, you can give classes. That's good. We need more women to preach in our movement, so that's good. The world will be different when you get bigger too. It'll be more acceptable. So you should give class. You'd be good at giving class. You practically give class every day anyways. Okay.
This, the Prahlad, the Indra, gave him his demon such as Prahlad. Is the same Prahlad? Because
yeah, it's Prahlad.
Indra was careful of Hiranyakashipu, but when Prahlad was a devotee, so when he came rude, then something changed. That's what he meant.
No, it's Prahlad Maharaj. That's who they're talking about.
But still, why is he here? Because he was a devotee already. He's a great devotee, so...
Yeah, that's what it says. Fearing such demons as Prahlad, because Bali Maharaj is a great devotee, but he attacked the heavenly planets. Because they're the leader of the demons, so they just act in a particular way. Even though they're devotees themselves, they... It's a little bit complicated to understand because if someone's a devotee, why will he act like a demon? But then you see the sixth canto, you see Vritrasura. So he's a devotee, he was a great devotee, but because he's in a demoniac body, he was acting like a demon. But in his heart, he was a devotee. So it's hard to understand these things. But Bali Maharaj attacked, Prahlad Maharaj attacked. Oh, that's
weird. We come across the section of Prahlad Maharaj.
Yeah, it doesn't discuss it, but the Bhagavatam doesn't discuss everything. It only discusses what's important. Yeah. These things aren't important. What's important is, you know, Prahlad's prayers to Nrisingadeva. That's the essence. You know, if you attack the heavenly planets, oh, that's not really... It's not really the... Yeah, but it's the same Prahlad. So. Okay. Thereafter, Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, offered oblations in the fire so that the sons of Raji would fall from moral principles. When they fell, Lord Indra killed them easily because of their degradation. Not a single one of them remained alive. From Kusha, the grandson of Kshatravritta, was born a son named Prati. The son of Prati was Sanjaya. The son of Sanjaya was Jaya. From Jaya, Krita was born, and from Krita, King Haryabala. From Haryabala came a son named Sahadeva, and from Sahadeva came Hina. The son of Hina was Jayasen. The son of Jayasen was Sankriti. The son of Sankriti was the powerful and expert fighter named Jaya. These kings were the members of the Kshatravritta dynasty. Now let me describe to you the dynasty of Nahush. Okay, so we'll continue reading into chapter 18. Any questions on chapter 17? Yeah, it's mainly just history. There's not a lot there. Philosophically, there's not a lot there. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami said, O King Parikshit, as the embodied soul has six senses, King Nahush had six sons named Yati, Yayati, Samyati, Ayati, Vyati, and Kriti. When one enters the post of king or head of the government, one cannot understand the meaning of self-realization. Knowing this, Yati, the elder son of Nahush, did not accept the power to rule, although it was offered by his father. So, Jagesh Prabhu?
Self-realization is the prime objective of human civilization, and it is regarded seriously by those who are situated in the mode of goodness and have developed brahminical qualities. Kshatriyas are generally endowed with material qualities conducive to gaining material wealth and enjoying sense gratification. But those who are spiritually advanced are not interested in material appearance. Indeed, they accept only the bare necessities of life of spiritual advancement in self-realization. It is specifically mentioned here that if one enters political life, especially in the modern day, one loses the chance of human perfection. Nevertheless, one can attain the highest perfection if one hears Srimad Bhagavatam. The hearing is described as Nityam Bhagavat Seva. Maharaj Parikshit was involved in politics, but because at the end of his life he heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami, he attained the perfection very easily. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore suggested Sthanisthita Sruti Gatam Sanu Van Manoge Ye Prayacho Jita Chito Pi Ashi Teish Tri Lokyam. Regardless of whether one is in a mode of passion, ignorance or goodness, if one regularly hears Srimad Bhagavatam from a self-realized soul, one is freed from the bondage of material involvement.
So any points?
The Prabhupada mentioning that if those who are in political life, they are more inclined to self-gratification.
Good. Anything else?
Saravanam and Kirtanam are the important processes of the order in itself.
Good. What else?
Important of Bhagavatam.
Yeah, one should hear.
Very good, but hearing all the time.
Anything else?
Listening Bhagavatam regularly from a
realized devotee. Good. Any other points? So, in the purport, Prabhupada explaining that one can be a Brahmana or one can be a Rajashi. Rajashi means like a saintly king. Brahmanas, Prabhupada explains in the purport, Brahmanas are in the mode of goodness, sattva-gun. So it means they're very detached from this world. But most people are not in sattva-gun, especially in Kali Yuga. Most people are in ignorance, most people. And then people are also mixed ignorance, which means passion ignorance. Some people are in passion. Goodness is harder to find, Kali Yuga. If you look at the mass of people, most of them are in the lower modes of nature. So, the Brahmana is naturally in sattva-gun. Sattva-gun means he's very peaceful. And Prabhupada explained that means you are detached. That's one of the symptoms of sattva-gun. It means one becomes very detached from this material world. So a devotee must be detached. We have to learn these qualities. The Prabhupada said we're creating a class of Brahmanas. Devotees need to take on and practice Brahminical qualities. It means we have to cultivate sattva-gun. And we have to develop these good qualities, because these are conducive for bhakti, or devotional service, to become detached. Whereas a Rajashi, or a saintly king, the Kshatriya class, they are more involved in this world. And Brahmanas are detached. You hear in the third canto of the Bhagavatam that when Swayambhuva Manu, when he was taking his daughter, Devahuti, to marry Kashyapa, the great sage. Kardama. When he's taking Devahuti to marry Kardama Muni, he was living in a hermitage in the forest. He was like a sage. And he was living away from civilization. And that's actually how a Brahmin prefers to live, in a very peaceful, very non-complicated way. Srila Prabhupada also showed us that when he was on the planet, he was traveling around Mumbai and these passionate cities. And he was staying in life members' houses. And some of these life members were very rich, very wealthy. And Prabhupada was staying with them. And they were hosting Prabhupada and his disciples, and Prabhupada was preaching. He was having lived in very opulent surroundings. And then Prabhupada went from there, he went to Mayapur. And when he got to Mayapur, back then there was only the hut. If you go there now, Mayapur, when you go on the front gate on the left, there's Prabhupada's hut. That's the original hut. So Prabhupada was living there in that hut. And Srila Prabhupada said to the devotees when he arrived there, he said, actually, this is how a Brahmana likes to live. And Prabhupada said, I prefer this. They're living in those big opulent houses with all that facility and, all that wealth. Prabhupada said, actually, a devotee does not like to live like that. A devotee actually prefers simplicity. That's the nature of a devotee. He likes to live Brahminically. He likes a detached, simple life, uncomplicated. So, if we make advancement, we should become more like that. But many people, and even many devotees, they're very passionate. So they like to have material facility. Even some devotees, if you give them the opportunity just to hear and chant, it's very difficult for them to take that opportunity. You see, Asita Rajaprabhu, when he got the opportunity, he's only just over 50, but when he got the opportunity, he left. And he went to the Dham, and more or less he's just been hearing and chanting the last couple of years. That's more or less what he's been doing. Right, and he can do it because he has the adhikar, the qualification. He's in sattva-gun. So he has the ability to do that. And that's what we should do. But many devotees don't have that ability. I know some other devotees, similar age, being in devotional service a similar amount of time. And also the opportunity has presented themselves, but they've told me they can't do it. They can't give up their work. They can't give up their job because they need something to do, because people are passionate these days. So even if they get the opportunity just to hear and chant about Krishna, they find it very difficult to do that. So we have to see what is our adhikar. But Prabhupada is explaining the real formula, or the real remedy, or the real process of purification for all of us, is to hear the Bhagavatam from self-realized souls. That is how we become purified. So whether you are detached and you can do it, or whether you're attached and you still need to be in the world, but that is the process of purification. So we need to find self-realized souls, those who are very advanced in Krishna conscious, and we need to hear the Bhagavatam from them. And that will purify us. I know for myself, I'm not ready at this point just to go to the Dham, like Vrindavan and Mayapur, and just to hear and chat. I'm not. I can go there for about 6 weeks at a time, but after that, that's enough. Some devotees can go more, some devotees can go less, and some devotees can't do it, some devotees can do it. But then I need engagement, I need to do things. And I like to hear and chant, but I can't do it all day. I need other activity, I need to manage, I need to organize, I need to do things, or preach, or do different things. But hearing, I can't do that all day. So when we become very purified, in the mode of goodness, then you can do these things. You see, like Bhakti Rasamrita Swami, when he comes, he just spends the whole day just preaching. Either he's reading, or he's chanting, or he's giving a class, or devotees just coming into his room. I'd go crazy if I was doing that. Devotees are just lining up coming in my room all day. I'd go crazy. Just listening to everyone's problems and trying to answer their questions and everything like that. So we need some of us need diversity according to our adhikar. But when you become very advanced and very pure, you can just be satisfied. So for us, who are generally passionate and we need to engage in so many activities, by hearing from self-realized souls, we become purified. Every morning I get up in the morning, I just listen. Put on my lectures and I just listen to very advanced devotees speak about Krishna. And then I study Prabhupada's books, and then I give classes, but I do so many other things as well. But every day we have to have that core sadhana, where we hear and chant about Krishna. That's what purifies us and elevates us towards Krishna. So, any points?
He was practicing well before he left. Though he was staying far away, he was doing all the temple programs at home. It made him easy to take.
Okay, good luck.
Not easy for everyone.
Yeah. You can try. See how you go. Get up in the morning, worship your deity, chant your rounds, and do all those activities. Any other points?
Could you regard again the Pastor Maharaj telling me that he had been practicing the 4 hours morning program, 2 hours of chanting, 1 hour deity worship, and 1 hour reading, like the whole family. Like he said that if you do that, like for many, many years, then you might get some tips.
So, like you said, that because he had been practicing for so long, so sincerely, that he could give it up. 4 hours, 50 minutes. Yeah, you have to have taste to do it. If you haven't got a taste, you won't do it. Yeah, try your best. Try and do it. Any other points? Because Nahush, the father of Yayati, molested Indra's wife, Sachi, who then complained to Agastya and other Brahmanas, these saintly Brahmanas cursed Nahush to fall from the heavenly planets and be degraded to the status of a python. Consequently, Yayati became the king. So you hear this pastime also in Mahabharata, how Nahush was cursed to come to the earth and take this birth as a python. So these things were done in the heavenly planets. It's described in Mahabharata here in the Bhagavatam. So the Bhagavatam is speaking about events that take place in different phases of time and in different locations in the universe. So very powerful descriptions which are being given. King Yayati had 4 younger brothers, whom he allowed to rule the 4 directions. Yayati himself married Devayani, the daughter of Shukracharya, and Samishta, the daughter of Vrishabhava, and ruled the entire earth. Maharaj Parikshit said Shukracharya was a very powerful Brahmana, and Maharajayati was a Kshatriya. Therefore, I am curious to know how there occurred this Pratiloma marriage between a Kshatriya and a Brahmana. Sri Ram Prabhu, would you like to read that?
According to the Vedic system, marriage between Kshatriya and Kshatriya or between Brahmanas and Brahmanas are general custom. If marriages sometimes take place between different classes, these marriages are two types. These marriages are of two types, namely Anuloma and Pratiloma. Anuloma marriage between the Brahmana and the daughter of a Kshatriya is permissible, but Pratiloma marriage between a Kshatriya and the daughter of a Brahmana is not generally allowed. Therefore, Maharaj Parikshit was curious about how Shukracharya, a powerful Brahmana, would accept the principle of Pratiloma. Maharaj Parikshit was eager to know the cause for this uncommon marriage.
Any points here?
Besides the previous section of where the wife needs to be a class lesser of same, not a higher, so again the same principle here. That is exactly the way. That's not been, has been followed from many times till now.
Any other points? Okay. Anything else? So, the Pratiloma. What is Pratiloma? Yeah, it means that the woman is. Yeah, Pratiloma. Anuloma means the favorable marriage. So when the Brahmana man, he can marry the Kshatriya woman or the Brahmana woman, but when the Brahmana woman, she marries the Kshatriya man, that's Pratiloma. That's considered not an auspicious match when the wife is superior. So generally, in the Vedic culture, it was not followed. It would not happen. The husband and the wife would marry like that. Usually it happened between equals. Even now in India, when people get married, they try to find people from the same caste. Even though the caste system's not really there. But they say, oh, you know, from this group, yeah, we will accept, because it was from the same caste, and the husband and wife can marry each other and like that. But previously, now when Varnashram was there, then Brahmanas would marry Brahmanas, generally. That was the system. And Kshatriyas would marry Kshatriyas, Vaishyas married Vaishyas, Sudras, Sudras. But sometimes there would be intermarriage between the castes. But generally it would not happen. It's very rare that someone would marry like that. Now the main reason is because of the psychology of men and women. And we've discussed it many times. It's very important to understand the difference between a man and a woman. A man, by nature, he needs to feel superior to a woman. That's his ego. That's called male ego or Purusha Bhav. Purusha means I am the enjoyer. Right. So if the woman is more intelligent than the man, it can create problems in the marriage. Therefore, it is said that the husband should have more qualification. And if the wife is more qualified, she has to be very expert to still make the husband feel that he is more qualified. That's the system. Just like in the example of Gandhari. So Gandhari, she was more qualified in some ways than Dhritarashtra, so then she blindfolded herself because she wanted to make her husband feel that it's the expertise of a wife, expertise of a woman, especially in the Vedic time. She has to make the husband feel superior, even though the husband may not be superior, but she has to make him feel like that. Then the husband, his ego is flattered, he feels superior, because that's how men like to feel. And then the marriage can be peaceful because the man is psychologically stable. But if the husband feels that the wife is superior or she's not respectful to him, it causes friction in the marriage. So in the Vedic times especially, the women had to be very expert, and in this day and age, the women still have to be very expert. It's not so much like that now, where it's, you know, caste system and all these things. But the basic premise is that a woman needs to make the man feel superior. Right? If the man feels inferior, it can be difficult. Although we do see marriages, even amongst devotees, I know devotees, where the wife is by far the more dominant person in the relationship. She's more dominant, she tends to control the husband, she tends to be the boss, like that.
Devotees. Devotees.
I've seen it. Even I can tell you their names. But we can't say that in public. But I've seen it. I mean, I can think some very clear examples of devotees where the wife is much more dominant than the husband. She virtually runs the relationship. So the husband, he may feel comfortable with that. Some men, they just feel naturally satisfied with that role. So that can work. But there has to be agreement between the two. But even still, in those circumstances, you still the wife still has the expertise to make the husband feel satisfied and superior. You know? So it means it's a basic understanding of how this material world works. So in order to have peaceful relationships, you have to understand how to drive the machinery. It's just like if you come to the farm, we have machinery there. So it's our policy, not just anyone can get on the machinery. Because we have woofers, we have volunteers, they come all the time. But we don't just let anyone jump on the tractor and start driving it, because it's a machine. You have to know how to use it. So in the same way, to be in a male body or to be in a female body, you're in a particular set of machinery, a yantra. So you have to know how to use it. Right? Husbands have to know how to deal with men, how to deal with women. Wives have to know how to deal with men, how to deal with husbands. And if everyone understands the psychology properly, then you can have peaceful relationships. Any points? Okay. Shukadev Goswami said, one day, Vrishabhava's daughter, Samishta, who was innocent but angry by nature, was walking with Devayani, the daughter of Shukracharya, and with thousands of friends in the palace garden. The garden was full of lotuses and trees of flowers and fruits, and was inhabited by sweetly singing birds and bumblebees. When the young lotus-eyed girls came to the bank of a reservoir of water, they wanted to enjoy by bathing. Thus they left their clothing on the bank and began sporting, throwing water on one another. While sporting in the water, the girls suddenly saw Lord Shiva passing by, seated on the back of his bull with his wife Parvati. Ashamed because they were naked, the girls quickly got out of the water and covered themselves with their garments. Samishta unknowingly put Devayani's dress on her body, thus angering Devayani, and then spoke as follows. Oh, just see the activities of this servant maid, Samishta. Discarding all etiquette, she has put on my dress, just like a dog snatching clarified butter, meant for use in a sacrifice. We are among the qualified brahmanas who are accepted as the face of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Brahmanas have created the entire universe by their austerity, and they always keep the absolute truth within the core of their hearts. They have directed the path of good fortune, the path of Vedic civilization, and because they are the only worshipable objects within this world, they are offered prayers and worshipped even by the great demigods, the directors of the various planets, and even by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Super Soul, the Supreme Purifier, the husband of the Goddess of Fortune. And we are even more respectable because we are in the dynasty of Bhrigu. Yet although this woman's father, being among the demons, is our disciple. She has put on my dress, exactly like a Shudra taking charge of Vedic knowledge. Shukadev Goswami said, when thus rebuked in cruel world, Sarmishta was very angry, breathing heavily like a serpent and biting her lower lip with her teeth. She spoke to the daughter of Shukracharya as follows. You beggar, since you don't understand your position, why should you unnecessarily talk so much? Don't all of you wait at our house, depending on us for your livelihood, like crows? Janish Rupu.
Crows have no independent life. They fully depend on the remnants of footsteps thrown by householders into the garbage tank. Therefore, because Brahmana depends on his disciples, when Sarmishta was heavily rebuked by Divyani, she charged Divyani with belonging to a family of crow-like beggars. It is the nature of the woman to fight verbally and even slight provocation. As we see from this incident, this has been their nature for a long, long time.
Any points?
Normal.
What?
It's a normal position for bodies.
What is that?
See, when
do you want lunch tomorrow?
No, Prabhu, not give much purpose. You can invite him.
Any other points? Inspiration to fight. And Bhagavatam says you're allowed to. It is the nature of a woman to fight verbally at even a slight provocation. So if we look realistically at this modern age, it's the nature of anyone to fight at a slight provocation. It's not so much women. Women are not so special. And it's just anyone in this age. Maybe in the previous age it was more like that. Yeah, but even in the previous age, I mean, you see so many episodes between the men in the previous, you know, so many fights, they're already in the Bhagavatam. You know, demigods are fighting and cursing and so many things are taking place. You know, Vashishta, Vishwamrita, you know, Daksha Yagya. Yeah, Daksha Yagya. Yeah, everyone loses control. Bhrigu and all, these are great sages. And they all start, you know. Can you imagine Burujan Prabhu and, you know, Dev Marita Swami and everyone start cursing each other? Okay. There are tensions up there in the higher levels of our movement. Even amongst the leaders, sometimes there are tensions. Okay. Some of them don't get along very well. But they know how to manage it. And they keep a little distant from each other. Because some of them, they're powerful personalities. So they know there's tension there, so they keep a little distant like that. They offer respect. Yeah, but they don't get into arguments because they understand they have difference of opinions. So devotees have to learn how to deal with things properly. If you look at the Daksha Yagya, it's a very good example. Because how did Lord Shiva deal the whole thing? He stayed quiet and left. Yeah, he didn't get involved. And even like there are big devotees in our movement, and some of them don't get along. You know, it's just the nature of the material world. Not everyone gets along. Different personalities. So they're very careful not to commit offences, not to deal with each other inappropriately. So devotees, we have to learn like that. Because it will always happen, even amongst devotees, that not everyone will get along. But it doesn't mean that you can just say whatever you want and provoke the other person and, you know, and turn everything into a difficult situation. Prabhupada said we should stay cool-headed. He said we should also get along with our god brothers and god sisters. That is the system. So when Prabhupada is saying here, the women are like this,
It's true, but I mean, these days, whenever Prabhupada says women or this in the Bhagavad Gita, these days I just look at it like it's men and women. Because really, I mean, there's not that much difference in Kali Yuga. You see the men doing fighting and carrying on, you see the women fighting and carrying on. Just to me, it's just everyone's doing it. So a devotee, we should stay aloof, detached, and not get involved in these kind of things. And be Krishna conscious. So, any points?
We see in the society this fighting as a politics and all happening for the office or relatives and for the property or whatever. I mean, you pick up again, people fight. And that difference is there everywhere. But you mentioned the fact that among the devotees also it is there. Then how do you understand that? That the devotee is what makes the difference, and also as an upcoming devotee, how should we take this one so that we keep focused on the...
No, because it means that it's the nature of material personality. So the nature of material personality is not that everyone gets along the same. But even though there are devotees, like senior devotees, GBC members and gurus, they don't get along, but still they don't cause politics with each other. They deal with it nicely. But it's just the material world. In the spiritual world, people tend to get along better. But even in the spiritual world, there's different parties. It's actually there. It clearly says in our philosophy, in our books, there's different parties. There's a left-wing camp, there's a right-wing camp. Chandravali is in charge of the right-wing camp. Radha is in charge of the left-wing camp. And some of Radha's assistants, like Champakalata, who is one of the Ashtasakis, one of the main gopis, assistants of Radha. If you go to Mayapur, she's the second one on Madhava's side. When we're looking at the... So then you see Radha Madhava, and then next to... very good. You know all of them? You know who was who? Sudevi, Rangadevi, Indulekha, Vishaka. Lalita. Madhava. Lalita. Champakalata. Chitra. Ranga's on the other side. Chitra. Tungavija. So Champakalata, she is expert at... It says thwarting Radharani's rivals. So Chandravali is coming with Shaivya and her group, trying to be with Krishna, and then she cuts them off, and she makes some story and everything, and then says no, they're over there or something, and they all go that way, and then so Radha can be with Krishna. So even in the spiritual world, there's a whole thing going on. But it doesn't get nasty. It's not like everyone's, like that. But there is a whole, there's a rivalry. There are different groups. So even in this world, even amongst our very advanced devotees in our society, but there's just differences. Just, one person's got one mood, one person's got it, and they just don't, they're like, best friends like that. But they respect each other. They love each other, but there's like different moods there. But they don't commit offences and they don't fight and all these things. But does that make sense? Yeah, if you want everything to be perfect, then it doesn't happen. And even in the spiritual world, it's not going to be like that. You get back there, it's not like everyone's just like on one side. There's different groups and they've got different moods, and it's just the way it is. Krishna likes to create some dynamic. But the point is, in the spiritual world, there's no upper rod. That's the point. And when devotees are advanced, like our gurus, our GBC members, they don't commit aparad to each other. Even though there may be differences of opinion, sometimes they have big differences of opinion. They vary different opinions on things, but they don't commit aparad, that's the point. Does it make sense?
Yep.
You had a point, or?
Yeah. No, in spiritual world, they mainly try to satisfy Krishna.
Yeah, the point.
Swarjiya just mentioned about that. You said about both men and women. You said when I see that mostly men get more provoked at this by few words of a woman. But she talks a little bit in a tricky way or just trying to, like you said, hurt the egos. Men gets provoked when he says.
Yeah, women are empowered. They're just empowered to say things just to... Yeah, they can get under your skin. they've got a shakti. It's like my wife, she can just like, you know, if she wants to, she can get under my skin, you know. Just like, you know, and even though I'm trying my best to tolerate, but I'm just like, just drive, you know, it's just like...
What do you do?
They're just empowered. What to do, you just leave the house. Yeah, let's pick up my.
Sure.
I take pick up my beads. I go for a japa walk. It's like, just. But even when you walk away, it's in your mind. It just drives you nuts. Yeah, it's like they're just empowered. Women are empowered. I do. You've got to be very respectful to women. You have to. They're more powerful than men. Actually, women are more powerful than men. You have to be very respectful towards women because they can totally destroy a man's life. they can disturb your mind for days.
I have to be so careful talking to my mother because if I'm in a good mood and maybe if she talks something, I can just go, why, you know? So when my wife says talk, I'm like, I don't know, just hear what I'm talking. If I'm getting angry, pull me down, you know, because I go crazy.
Any other points? Okay. Shall I provide key?
Yeah. Sure.